My name is Billy Lau, and today I have the pleasure to talk to you about a work that we've done entitled Mimesis Aegis, a Mimicry Privacy Shield. Essentially, this is a systems approach to data privacy on public cloud. And I have the pleasure to collaborate with Simon Chung, Chen Yu Song, Yongjing Zhang, Wenki Li, and Alexandra Bodireva. We are all from Georgia Tech Information Security Center. So without further ado, let's begin by motivating our work. Unfortunately, today we live in a world where users don't have much control over their personal data when it is communicated via public cloud. Software such as mobile apps has become more and more prevalent, but they are designed and built in such a way that user has no choice but to fully trust the public cloud service providers for the security of their data. Therefore, users face this all or nothing dilemma. They either fully trust this PCS or they don't use it, therefore losing utilities. And examples of this are plenty, like Gmail, WhatsApp, WeChat, Viber, Skype, you name it. The question is, how do we then change this status quo? In theory, the aforementioned problem can be solved if end-to-end encryption were to be applied on all communication data. However, in practice, this is really hard to achieve. And as we have surveyed, existing solutions present their own unique problems. For example, most solutions require users to be trained to use custom apps or software to perform safe communication. A good example of this would be like users will have to use, say, a PGP client in order to send a safe, secure email. And other classes of work have questionable data isolation model. And this I will explore further when I discuss about related work. So with this in mind, we propose a solution called Mimesis Aegis, Mimesis Mimicry Aegis Shield. In short, I call it MAEGIS, where we apply easily end-to-end encryption to users' communication data, but we also preserve user experience at the same time. And we achieve this basically by mimicking GUIs of the app of interest. On top of that, we also need to, in certain cases, interact with the app of interest on behalf of user. And MAEGIS has certain properties like a good isolation model where the data and logic is properly isolated from the untrusted entities. And our approach is basically generalizable across different apps in the same category. These apps are the ones that you have seen I mentioned just now. And from our experience, we know that our technique is resilient to app updates. So to just give a hint of how this looks like in real life, the screenshot here shows an example of what we can do. When MAEGIS is turned off, the user sees what the app sees right here, which is basically encoded ciphertext. And we've chosen to encode this in Chinese, Japanese, Korean, CJK characters. Let's see what happens when user turns on MAEGIS as easy by tapping on the button here. And user now sees plain text. Before I explain the magic that's going on behind this, allow me to first compare our work with existing solutions in a categorical manner. So the first class of solutions are standalone solutions. Basically, since these solutions are usually custom made, it is no surprise that it can protect data confidentiality well and also have good isolation from untrusted entities. Examples of such solutions are like PGP, Gibberboard, and on mobile environment, you have TechSecure, SafeSlinger, and then you have also academic work like Fly By Night, which tries to encrypt Facebook messages and a lot of other solutions outside. However, there are two main problems with this class of solution. Number one is that it either requires open protocol for you to provide security onto the existing protocol, or you need to reverse engineer such protocol. For example, there is no standalone secure client for WhatsApp. And even if there is, usually the user experience will be altered because inevitably the look and feel of the app will be different because it is a separate different app. Now the second class of solutions that we like to compare against is browser plugins and extensions. And this class of solutions basically allows you to provide a very transparent integration with the applications of interest. Examples of this are also aplenty: Scramble, TrustSplit, NOIB stands for none of your business, and SaveButton. The point here is that although they achieve different goals, but they try to do it in a very transparent manner where users do not need to take additional steps. The problem here is that, as evident, is that this set of solutions are only applicable to web applications. The question is, how about mobile devices? Have we seen WhatsApp browser plugins? So in contrast, MEGIS is a self-contained solution on end devices that do not face the same set of limitations. Now, there's another class of solution which basically takes the app and rewrites it or repackage it. So with this, one can basically insert security checks or harden the app of interest and provide transparent integration at the same time. Examples of this is like Aurasium, presented here in Usenet Security a few years ago, another work called Dr. Android. However, the problem here is that when one does this, one would inevitably break app updates because you have to change the code, and this causes the app app signature to change. And another problem with this is that the security of the reference monitor that is inserted into these apps may be compromised because it resides in the same address space as the untrusted entity. Having said all this, let's look at how our work addresses these limitations yet preserves the positive properties that we've seen through analyzing our system design. But before we dive into the architectural makeups of MEGIS, let's first state our design goals. Number one, we would like to offer good security, of course. And this is done by having a strong isolation from untrusted entities. What exactly are these untrusted entities? I'll go into this in the next slide. Secondly, besides having good security, we also like to preserve user experience. And this can be done by having a transparent integration with existing apps. And from a developer's point of view, goal number three is important. One needs to come up with a solution that is easy to maintain and scale, and we have come up basically with a sufficiently general purpose approach. So, as with any discussion about security design, it is not meaningful without first discussing about the threat model it is architected to protect. Hereby, these are the lists of the untrusted parties. Number one is the public cloud service providers, as mentioned in the very first slide. Now, here, this does not mean that we necessarily consider the PCS providers as malicious, but as, from a design point of view, it simply makes it easier and simpler to design systems with this entity untrusted. And since this is untrusted, so are the client-side apps because they come from the same origin. On top of that, we also do not trust the middle boxes between PCS and the client-side app. Example of this would be the ISP. On the other hand, this is our TCB. We assume that the hardware is trusted. We also assume that the operating system is trusted to provide us with sufficient isolation in terms of the app sandbox and also process isolation from the untrusted apps on the same system. Now, another unique point here is the soft keyboard we also assume to be trusted because on mobile devices, we do not have a physical keyboard. And of course, we trust our own logic to be implemented correctly. And finally, we trust the user to basically turn on the protection when they are communicating data that they do not want to be eavesdrop. With this, now we are ready to analyze the architecture of MEGIS. The first component and the most important one that distinguishes it from other work is that is one we call layer 7.5. So layer 7 is the applications layer. And layer 8 is popularly being used to refer to the users. Since we are sitting between the application and the user, we call it layer 7.5. Now, this diagram basically explains the magic that you have seen in the introduction after MEGIS has been turned on. It basically is a collection of mimic GUIs that is painted on a transparent window that gives the user the perception that they are still interacting with the original app. Now, questions may arise of how do we get the proper properties of this MIMIC GUI such that they can, for example, how do you know the exact coordinates and the size of such MIMIC GUIs? And the answer is in the second component and also the backbone of our architecture, that is the UI Automation Manager. We call the UIAM. Now, the UIAM gives us the context of the screen. By context here, we mean that what app is currently running, which UI state is the app currently in. Besides that, the UIAM also is useful to provide to relay user input to the underlying app. Example of such scenario is to be able to click on the underlying send button on behalf of the user after MEGIS has performed the encryption and encoding. And as for keyboard input, MEGIS can directly intercept the plaintext, user plaintext, by rendering MIMIC edit boxes on top of the original app's edit box. The next component is the per target client app or the per TCA logic. So this basically processes the UI tree from the UIM to determine the state of the current UI. And basically after that it decides based on the states, it decides the suitable actions for different UI states. For example, when you are just previewing Gmail in the front screen or when you're composing an email message, these are separate and different UI states. And then we have a cryptographic module. The first subcomponent here is the key manager, which basically does the bookkeeping of applying the correct keys to the appropriate conversations. Think of this as a very efficient password manager that is integrated into MEGIS. In addition to that, various key distribution protocols, for example, simple password schemes, Diffie-Hellman, or whatever you want, can be implemented and plugged into MEGIS and be done in a transparent way because of the architecture. And we consider this effort as an orthogonal aspect to our work. The second component is also quite interesting, is an encryption scheme we devised to allow search over encrypted data without server modification. Now, although this is very interesting, we do not have the time to go into the details of this. If you're interested, please refer to our paper. So, having this said, it is best to illustrate how the user perceive the usage of our app with a demo video. So, after installing MEGIS, you will see a shield icon that is always on top of the screen. So this is MEG's main interface. It tells you the status of protection. By default, it is turned on. Now let's see how MEG's can be used to protect our WhatsApp messages. Let's chat with Bob. So MEG's will initiate a secure key exchange protocol, and this can be customized to whichever protocol that is suitable when you send your first message. And when your friend comes online, MEG's that is installed on his device will complete the key exchange. Once the key exchange is complete, all subsequent messages will be fully encrypted. And each encrypted message is encrypted by a lock icon, as you can see. Now, as you are chatting, note that features like autocomplete, spell check, and swiping across keyboard still work as usual. To see what's happening in the background, turn off MEG's by tapping on the shield icon. It now turns red. As you can see, MEG's encrypts and encodes all your conversations, so WhatsApp only has encrypted contents. Therefore, no third party, including WhatsApp, can read your messages. You can now be assured that your communication is private. With that, I'd like to move on to some evaluations, beginning with performance numbers. Basically, we implemented our prototype and experimented on stock Android phones, which are LG Nexus 4 devices, running Android 4.4.2. And each experiment is repeated basically 10 times, and the average is taken. So for previewing the encrypted email, it takes on average 76 milliseconds to render plain text on layer 7.5. And this is well within expected response time, which is 50 to 150 milliseconds. And the composing and sending of encrypted email, we basically leverage the Enron email database as a representation of what normal emails will look like. And for this, we perform a worst-case scenario where we try to encrypt the longest email with 953 words, of which 362 are unique. It took 205 milliseconds to encrypt, build a search index, and encode. Now, this, of course, is a worst-case index. A worst-case scenario, we don't expect that a normal user would send 953 words on their mobile device. So with this, I'm ready to conclude. In conclusion, users can now regain control over the private data using our system, where the guarantee is that the plain text is never visible to the client apps or the service providers and any meter boxes, and the original while preserving the original user experience. For developers, this technique is generalizable to a large number of apps and is resilient to app updates. And with that, I'll open up to questions.
Hi. Thanks, Billy. We have time for a few questions.
Hi. Okay. I wanted to ask you about the UI components with this. I didn't understand, do you have to do UI components for each application, and how's that work done, et cetera?
Okay, so for in general, the operating system or the framework provides a native UI rendering. So basically, what you need to do is just to choose the correct UI. Let's say, is it a text box, or is it a button, or is it an edit box? And you just need to...
Who's you?
Sorry?
Who's you?
Or the developer.
The developer of the application, the developer of
our system.
Of your system,
yes.
Would do it. So it's a per application overhead to...
Correct.
So, okay, thank you.
Yep.
Bill Aiello, University of British Columbia. Thanks for the talk. Question, your threat model, do you assume that the service provider and obviously then the app on the phone are honest but curious, or are they, can try an active attack against your system?
Right, so as mentioned, actually, is that we assume they are honest but curious.
Okay. And then do you have, I mean, if the original app doesn't support, let's say, a tag of things like private text box versus public, how do you deal with that?
I see. So from our experience is that most apps, especially the class of messaging apps, they simply use native UI widgets that's provided by the operating system, which then we are able to get information of what type that is exactly.
Okay, thanks.
Steve Belevin, Columbia University. Did you do any formal evaluation to see how users reacted to the system, whether it's another button that they have to tap or anything like that? Did they use it correctly? Did they like the difference? Did they not mind the difference? Did they not notice? Did you do any evaluation like that?
Good question. So I'm sorry, I actually did not include in this talk, but in the paper, we actually describe a user acceptability study. In this study, what we did was we recruited a number of students, and we asked them to see if they can perceive noticeable differences and to see if the level of acceptance of applying such a layer onto the target app.
Okay. And?
Well, the conclusion is that they do not perceive noticeable difference, and whatever the encryption is going on is basically tolerable.
Okay, thanks.
Good afternoon, Giselle Font from University of Chile. We usually share images through this messaging system. Are you envisaging in the future upgrade of the system have encrypted images or other media?
Right, that's a good question. So there are several aspects to the answer to the question. Is that number one is that from the UIAM component just now, we can easily extract text from the application, but this particular interface does not provide us with the bit information of what is being drawn on the screen. That is the first obstacle. The second part is that there needs to be a format-abiding input to the apps. For example, if you encrypt a picture and become random bits, it could be rejected by the underlying apps as an invalid picture and so on. And even if you have that in the correct format, it will go through some most of the time, especially image, multimedia, it will go through a compression, which will then causes it to be not very compatible with encryption schemes. So you first need to have encryption schemes that can survive compression, for example.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we have time for one last quick question.
Hi, Sia Dashti from Newcastle University. Who chooses the keys?
I see. So we leave this as orthogonal. As pointed out, you can choose whichever key distribution system that suits your usage the best. Let's say if you want to go with password-based, and you can assume that there's an out-of-band communication for password, and then you can apply it directly onto this. Or you can use, like what I showed in the demo video, a Diffie-Hellman, which is negotiated automatically.